Welcome to Tracks Cultures. I'm Mike Piccinato, your host. This podcast unravels the intricacies of transitions across cultures. For those feeling the pull of change or supporting loved ones through it, this podcast is for you. We understand the uncertainty and excitement that come with such transitions, and together we'll explore how to adapt while maintaining community and belonging. Throughout our episodes, we'll draw on insights from the Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook by Dr. Stephen W. Jones. Whether you're moving to a new place or supporting someone who is, this podcast offers encouragement and connection. Enjoy the conversations as we navigate the challenges and joys of cross-cultural transitions together. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 5. In this episode, we start a two-part series on culture with Kate and Joel Damon and special guest, Dr. Stephen W. Jones. In this episode, we're going to start by answering the question, what is culture? And talk about what makes some cultures different from others and how complicated these differences are. Well, it is so great to be back and to be recording again with you, Kate and Joel, and this time to also have Stephen Jones with us. Stephen, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Stephen is the author of the book, Cross-Cultural Transitions Handbook, that we've been using, and is also on staff with us at Envision Berlin, future teammate of Kate and Joel. And if I were to start to list all of his accomplishments, we would fill the whole half hour. So we'll avoid that. You can look him up online and chase him down there. Today, we're going to talk about what is culture. And so, Stephen, I think we'll kick it right to you. And if you could answer the question, what is culture? That'll get us started.
Yeah, I think I remember, oh gosh, what was it like 15 years ago when I was working on my master's, we were trying to define culture and read that a couple decades before that, there were already something like 600 definitions of culture. And so I feel like it's just one of those things that means so many things that sometimes it ends up being a hard topic of conversation because people think they're saying the same thing and they're not. You know, like sometimes you think about culture and you're thinking about music or art, or you think about like high culture kinds of things, or of course there's yogurt, but I think the simple definition that I like. Yogurt. Yeah.
Culture. Yogurt culture. Jeez.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll catch up. Goodness.
I made a face. Mike smiled and Joel goes, yogurt?
Very good.
Yeah. When I was leaving Omaha, this is a long time ago now, but Jenny and I were moving out of Omaha and some friends were like throwing a party for us as we were going. And they were doing something that represented how they thought of us. And somebody gave me a yogurt container. And I was like, I don't know what this means. So that has stuck with me.
That's really good. That's really good.
But the definition that I like, I got from a friend of mine, it's just how people do their stuff together. And so thinking about this idea that culture is something you have in common with other people, that it is patterned around the things that we do to go through life. There's a more complicated definition that I like that goes something along the lines of the learned and shared patterns of values, beliefs, and behaviors of groups of interacting people. And that one I think has most of what I would want to say about culture in it. So the idea that culture is not something innate, it's not something that you're born with, but it's something that you grow into, you learn it, you share it with other people, you don't have a culture by yourself. And then, yeah, there are these patterns and they take place at multiple levels, right? So things that you believe, things that you value, the behaviors that you have. And some elements of culture are really visible as you're crossing from one to another. You can see some of those differences right away. And then there's other stuff that goes right below the waterline. It's like a little bit hard to see. And then there's other stuff that's actually super hard to see. And it's so hard to see that people from a culture often don't know certain things about themselves. Like they have attributes that are cultural that they themselves don't realize are cultural. And so there's kind of this whole range of things that we're talking about when we talk about culture, but kind of just back to that very simple idea that it's how people do their stuff together. So how do we eat? How do we clothe ourselves? How do we feed ourselves? But also how do we behave? How do we raise our kids? How do we, and that we is big, it's as a society. How are we doing those things?
So, Stephen, you just said below the waterline and above the waterline. And in the book, you have this illustration of an iceberg. Can you describe the iceberg illustration a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. And like any metaphor, it's got issues. In fact, one of my former profs has an article called Why Culture is Not an Iceberg or something like that. The basic idea is that, you know, an iceberg, I think, is something like 13% of the mass of an iceberg is above the waterline. And then the other 87% is below the waterline. And that's what's creating the buoyancy right through the water displacement that's actually holding the thing up. And so when you look at an iceberg, what you see, you know, is that 13%. And it may be very interesting. You know, you can make all sorts of descriptions about it. You could take a nice picture. You could study it. But if you stopped there and said, I now understand this iceberg, that would be false because it would be so incomplete. And a lot of times when we think about our interaction with other cultures, we're really talking about that observable stuff. But then there's all of this other stuff. And I think that I like the idea of an iceberg and the idea that what's underneath is supporting those behaviors. And so that idea that what's down underneath there is, yeah, sometimes way, way, way down there too. I have a friend who liked to draw the iceberg and then he put a little scuba diver next to it and be like, this is what we're doing. We're trying to explore. And first, we're actually trying to explore our own culture and trying to understand ways in which we are cultural beings that are having a cultural experience of the world. And when we look out at the other icebergs, and of course, again, this metaphor is immediately breaking down, but when we look at the other icebergs, we're seeing only that little top part at first. And so kind of recognizing both our lack of understanding our own culture, as well as the lack of visibility of what we can see right away in other cultures, means that we're just missing a lot. There's so much more information. There's so much more going on.
To add on to that, icebergs are also, I find it really surprising how different the underside looks from the top. You would think it would just be more of like this sort of snowy looking hunk of ice, but it's this complicated, intricate, beautiful thing that looks nothing like what you would expect. And I like that in terms of, you know, looking at culture the same way, that there's these things, the way we act this out, but the reasons behind it are, that's a twisty path sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So Joel and Kate, obviously when you move to Berlin, what you're going to see is the top of the iceberg first. And so it's just going to take some time to figure out, wow, what are people doing together? How do we do things together here? And then getting below the waterline takes even more time. And one of the things that I'm finding helpful, even on home assignment, is to do some hard work to try to figure out more about the below the waterline things in my own cultural background. Why do I do the things that I do? And so I thought maybe I'd kick that out. I don't know if it's a fun exercise, but just as a thought exercise for you guys, what are some of the above the waterline or below the waterline markers that you've noticed even in Omaha, whether that's art scene culture or church culture or bank life culture, day-to-day life?
Give me an example of a marker.
I think one thing would be like, what are things that if somebody were to walk into a project event that people would see on the surface level, that would be kind of an above the waterline
marker. Can I go even more specific?
Okay. You sure can.
I think even just as basic as like, okay, what does your project shirt mean? And not like, what does the image on it mean? What does the existence of it mean?
Wait, the existence of the image?
No, the existence of the shirt.
Is this an above the waterline or below the waterline?
Right. So the shirt is above the waterline, right? I walk into a project event and I see Joel wearing a project shirt, right?
Yes.
That's above the waterline. I can see the shirt. And clothing is one of those things that a lot of times we think about as being above the waterline. But then like, what is the meaning of the shirt? But not just the image, but like the existence of it.
That specific shirt though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which would entail like, yeah. So it would be like this. It was purposefully designed to make the wearer look more intimidating and represent a culture of that as well. Like that?
Yeah, keep going.
Because we actually are very welcoming and friendly and supportive of the community, I feel a very heavy compulsion to make ourselves look as scary and off-putting as possible in order to not feel like I'm running Candyland.
Because?
because I am. I don't know. It's way more fun to get something that I don't like when the mean gruff guy in Home Alone turns out to save the day and be actually really nice and not scary, right? Like that.
So one of the things that I like to do with cultural stuff is play the game Seven Layers of Why. So like underneath, like from any of those things that you just said, we could just take one of those and go like branch off into a Seven Layers of Why exercise.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Why? Like, so tell me about wondering at the cultural reasons behind a shirt.
Yeah. One of the things that for me is really interesting is to take cultural artifacts and to ask questions about them. Where did they come from? What did they mean? Mm. So for example, you know, you take out dollar bill, right? And start asking questions about what does it mean? When in my cultural anthropology classes, I would bring in a friend of mine had a speed limit sign. And so I'd bring it in and put it up on the board. And I'd ask people what it meant or what are the stories that this speed limit sign is telling? Mm-hmm. I'll just give you some examples for that. So a speed limit sign, I think it said limit 55. So some of the stories that are there, one is that this is a culture that can fabricate things out of metal. They can coat things reflectively, right? There's a reflective coating on it. They use Latin lettering. They use Arabic numerals. There's a numbering system that is base 10, which is interesting. That's not universal. There's the idea of ratios, right? That you can take a ratio of distance to time and come up with this idea of speed. There's this idea of enforcement, right? That if you don't do what that sign is indicating, that somebody could impose consequences on you. And so then you can keep going further.
Does that help, Joel and Kate?
Does it help in understanding?
I mean, the way Stephen has described this more, what I'm asking for, are there examples that you can think of? Can you think of other examples and say, oh, yeah, this is what people see, but the reasons for why we do that?
Yeah, a big one in the reading and the thing that kind of kept popping into my head is there's a term, and it's used in Minnesota and probably other Midwestern states as well, but we say Nebraska nice, right? We like to brand ourselves as nice and polite. And I don't think that that's actually true. I don't think we're nice. I think we like to see ourselves, or we like to be seen as helpful. So that is what is interpreted as our niceness. Now, I haven't dug into why we like to be helpful towards each other, but it's not, I don't think it's out of niceness. It's not out of a genuine care for the other person, I don't think.
What do you think some of the below the waterline motivations for that are?
Yeah, right? Like, That's such an interesting question. Like why, or a thing to think about, like why, what's the purpose of being like just knowing that you are going to be in need, at some deep down, you know, thing inside you that knows that you actually do rely on your community, no matter how far out in the suburbs you get. And so you do help others. I don't know.
I think it. Nebraska and Omaha, especially, it's a bunch of small towns all put together. And I think almost everybody grew up with like going to church with your grandma or just going to church in general. And that's just what we do. It's the Christian thing to do, to be nice. And it's not out of kindness, I don't think. It's just the way, that's our culture. That's what we do. We smile at strangers and we help people when it's convenient. And yeah, that's the culture of Nebraska and Omaha in particular. It's just like you are friendly and smiley because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. But then we have, and Kate was talking about this earlier today, like if we really were helpful or if we really were nice, like we wouldn't have the highest population of impoverished Black children in the country, right? We wouldn't have the most segregated city in the United States. And so it also feels like it's covering for some of our lackings.
I remember when we were downtown Omaha back in September last year. And I mean, the huge Stagecoach Pioneer Buffalo sculptures that are just kind of all through downtown. And I think that may be part of why in the Midwest, a lot of people are initially nice, is because there was a time where my survival depended on the niceness of other people and other people's survival depended on the niceness of us. So on the surface level, we're there to help people out. And I wonder if that's one of those cultural carry downs.
Yeah. And like Omaha prides itself on like the American dream. Like we've got the College World Series and like we're a foodie city. And so it's just like food and baseball and we're all in this together is that's Omaha on the surface.
Well, let's kind of move on to the next part of what we want to talk about. And that is that cultures can often be very different from each other. And again, Stephen, if you don't mind, we can kick it to you. Why are cultures so different from one another?
Yeah, some of it has to do with what you were just talking about, both the combination of history as well as like where we are geographically and what we've had to respond to geographically. The adaptations that we have to make in order to survive in a place are one of the reasons for that. Another is that historically we've tended to be more similar to people who are exposed to the same things that we are, right? So like if you kind of for a moment forget about the internet and think about, you know, if you grew up in Mexico City, would you be more likely to read a Mexican newspaper or an Omaha newspaper? Well, probably a Mexican one, right? Like they're just things related to proximity that inform the stories that we use to make sense of the world and the ways that we interact with the people that we're most close to over time are part of how culture is shaped. And then when you add to that, then the specifics of, okay, how do we actually survive here? Or how have other groups of people affected our group of people, that kind of thing. And that's through human history, right? All across the world, those kinds of questions are at play. And so we've had reasons that it has made sense to develop in certain ways. Some of those traits that we've developed are adaptive in the sense that they further the health and long-term survival of the group. Some are maladaptive in the sense that they actually challenge the group, but they're still a response to those kinds of environmental stimuli. So just because a culture develops in a certain way doesn't even necessarily mean it's good for that culture, but it's usually in response to something. So there's kind of that mix of adaptive and maladaptive. But then in terms of like, as we start thinking about how can cultures be so different from one another, I think one of the ways in which this gets really complicated, and one of the reasons that cultural inquiry both is very exciting and interesting, but also can be really, I don't know, almost, well, threatening is probably the right word, is that if we don't start with the assumption that everybody has the same experience of the world, and instead start with the assumption that people have potentially really, really different experiences of the world, and start by saying, okay, what is fundamentally real to people from this culture versus what is fundamentally real to people from another culture? Or, you know, epistemologically, how do we know things, right? Different cultures vary at those levels. Or what is goodness? Or what does the human mean? And if we kind of say, okay, actually, like, everything we know about what it means to be human could conceivably, like, have different answers under the surface in other cultures. And when we look above the waterline, a lot of times we're seeing things that are influenced by our similarities, right? So, like, I have to eat, you have to eat. We're from different cultures, but we both have to eat. And so we kind of look at that and we're like, oh, you know, same thing. But maybe the definition of I is completely different from my culture to your culture, right? So who is eating might be really, really different. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think this is sometimes where things get really tricky, because we'll sit in our philosophical conversation evenings in Berlin, sometimes gathered with a group of people from different cultures, and someone will throw out a statement like, well, I mean, we all do this for the same reason. And it's really hard to convince them that that might not be true. Have you guys ever had experiences? I mean, you just had an experience with some intercultural people, even in your own community. And sometimes we just all make assumptions that the reason we do things are for the same reason. Have you guys had experiences where you've run into people just doing things culturally very different, and the initial response is, we had one person that their response to everything was, that makes no sense. That makes no sense. I'm like, well, throw that out. It does make sense. You just don't understand why yet.
Yeah. Yeah. When we were dealing with that incident across the street earlier today, like this mother was just weeping And I didn't know if it was okay to like, just knowing that she comes from such a different culture, I was worried about making things worse by inserting myself into the situation. I think, I don't know. It was a person just absolutely wrecked. I wanted to hug her. I went over and started cleaning. I started to think like, I don't know if I'm being offensive, if I'm involving myself in someone's business that is not mine. Is this, you know, am I invading their privacy? Would I be offending the father of the house? All these things were just running through my head, and it was just a break in my heart because it was like, I'm about to have this conversation with you guys. And it's like, I didn't understand my neighbor across the street.
Well, and I think that is a funny thing is like, we don't know them well enough to know these things, but I just took the daughter to the bank and she was born and raised here. All the kids were born and raised here. They've been here a long time. And so they're just as much of like United States citizens as I am, like born and raised here. But like, I didn't know that because I didn't go across the street and I've said hi and I've helped out a couple times.
Yeah, we've only talked with them a couple of times.
Yeah. But then like just having a conversation with the daughter who's saying, yeah, my brother, he's angry about some stuff and he might be on drugs. And it's just like, okay, so he's just an angry 21-year-old kid. It has nothing to do with his culture. He's just an angry kid and did some really stupid stuff today.
And I think that's where we can slide pretty naturally into the last concept that we wanted to hit on for this episode is that it's more complicated than we think it is because the way our brains often work is we want to reduce it to those onlys or to those similarities.
Well, I also want people to act like me a lot and understand and like respect the same things I respect. Joel and I were camping in Utah and we're in this gorgeous, beautiful canyon. And I think people should be quiet and respectful. The other people there did not think that. They were partying and camping and having a great time. I was mad because I was just like, this, you need to be quiet and respect the area. And they didn't like that I was annoyed with them. It's just like, Joel and I talked about this. It's just, neither of us were doing anything wrong. We just both had a different idea of what should happen in this situation. And we're not the partiers when we're camping, and they were, and that was their culture. And our culture was shut up. I'm trying to enjoy the nature.
Did they have music going?
No, they were,
thank goodness they were wearing Bluetooth headphones. They were like standing up in this rock formation that was like the central vista of the entire space we were in. And they were like fist pumping with they had headphones on like this and they're going, whoa, woo, and like clapping. And it was, I mean, like you can hear someone.
It was in a canyon, so you could hear it. Yeah.
Down there. Yeah. You're in this like echoing. Again, like that dude was so excited, he was having
the best time.
The environment and the drugs that were pumping through his system, no doubt. And he was expressing himself in a way that he felt was appropriate. And it was just interesting to be in that same space and have to exist with someone that we just disagree with very much, you know. And seeing like our interpretation of what that space was supposed to be used for and then someone else's head to head.
There's a quote that I love from a book by Eva Hoffman, and she talks about the idea that for all of our, you know, fancy theories for interacting across cultures and whatnot, that when we like sit down from somebody and there's like difference staring us in the face, that it always contains an element of violation. Which I found really interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah.
Like, so there's this idea, thinking about it, it's more complicated than we think it is. It's, I think, in multiple directions. One of the things in intercultural competence that we pay a lot of attention to is that we want to focus both on the importance of interacting with cultural similarity and cultural difference well. And so, like, when we're interacting, for example, with your neighbors across the street to say, yeah, no, there are things that we're going to have in common. Like, it's impossible for us to share no similarity of perception. That's an idea from Marshall Singer. We will share certain things in common. And also, it is impossible for us to have complete overlap of perception. And so on the one hand, we're not going to be exactly the same. And on the other hand, we're not going to be exactly different. And so in between, how do we find those similarities that are similar enough that it's like, okay, yeah, I can build a bridge here, while at the same time recognizing maybe the foundations of that bridge are different for them than they are for me. So this is where, like, we can start building relationships across cultures, especially based on similarities, and that can be super useful. And at the same time, recognizing I need to interact well, there's really benefit to interacting well with my own culture as well. But then recognizing as soon as we start putting weight on that bridge, like, we'll start to find like, oh, yes, I'm interacting with you, and I thought we meant the same thing by this. And no, we definitely don't. and then what do you do with that, right?
This is something I've been thinking about, because I can fit in anywhere here. Anywhere in the States, I can find a spot that fits. And that's one of the things I'm nervous about in Berlin is, what if I don't find a place to fit in? Because it's just so easy here. And people have done a really good job of telling me how Midwest I am and how no one will like me there. And I stopped listening to people, and I will find a spot. But it's going to be so different, because I can fit in right here easily.
I think one of the advantages of a city like Berlin is that it's not really Germany. I mean, it is, but it's an international city with people from 190 different countries. And so it's not like when you come to Berlin, it's going to be, oh, there is nobody like you there.
Right.
And I mean, I think our team will have a higher concentration of people from Nebraska than from anywhere else. And so nothing else will fit in with us.
We have a resident who's been complaining about that, actually.
There's so many people from Nebraska.
Yeah.
But I think that's a reasonable respect to have. Hey, it's going to be different, but it's not necessarily a reasonable fear to have. Because if you're a person that is open to learning about how other cultures work and open to fitting in, you can do that, and you'll figure it out. I think the warning I would give is just don't expect it to be as fast as it might be when you're getting used to getting to know people in a culture that you're familiar with.
Yeah.
Or I think the other thing that happens here is a lot of times relationships can be built in that, particularly like because there are expats from all over the world, sometimes there are relationships that are built fairly quickly in that expat space, in the kind of this third culture space, which is not really mm-hmm. my culture, not really your culture, not really Berlin culture. It's just sort of this in-between thing. And we can build relationships sometimes really fast there. But then again, when we actually need that relationship to mean what it would mean back home, wherever that is, I can't be that person for somebody else in that bubble if I don't actually understand what the relationship back home would be. And they can't be that for me either. We can still be for each other there in ways that are still meaningful, but not in the way that either of us would expect. Because like the relationship we built was not actually built on either of our cultures.
This actually makes a really great place for us to bring this recording to a close, not in a sense of hopelessness or, oh no, it's going to be really hard. But in the sense that what we want to talk about in the next episode is the idea that moving between cultures is deeply disorienting. And I think this sets up that conversation well.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining us today on Tracks Cultures. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to dive deeper, we invite you to join our community on Discord. It's a space for sharing experiences, asking questions, and connecting with others who are navigating similar journeys. See the link in our show notes to become part of our growing community. Your support means the world to us. And if you'd like to help us continue our work as a creative community looking for the meeting place of faith, art, and culture, consider becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/envisionberlin to find out how you can contribute. Until next time, keep embracing change and embodying transformative hope for humanity.
I have this strange experience that a lot of times when I say something, people will be like, well, now that I'm thoroughly depressed, let me move on to the next thing.